Welcome to The Green Room, the podcast that bridges the gap between church production and every other aspect of a worship service. From programming directors to worship leaders, volunteers to vendors, tune in for inspiring conversations, expert advice, and a unique look into the intricate puzzle of church production. Here's your host, Aaron Freeman.
Hey, Jonathan. Thanks for joining me today. Mm-hmm. Would love for you to just to tell people who you are, what you do, and how you're involved in the church world.
Sure. My name is Jonathan Almacher. I run a company that does fabrication and scenic design for primarily churches, but concerts, activations, all kinds of photo booths, anything people want custom built that they don't know who to call. We get that call a lot of times. My intro into the church world came via Big Stuff Camps, which was a Christian camp that's in PCB, Panama City Beach, Florida. Went there as a student. It was the first time I saw a big production, elements, lighting, video, audio, you know, you could feel the intensity of the room. I think I was probably 12 years old. And that was like the start of my journey of just like wanting to be in a room and an environment that gets to create or be a part of a team that gets to create moments like that. But yeah, I mean, that's the short of it. I can give you my whole life story, but it's pretty, pretty long.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with Big Stuff. I just know the name. I've heard of it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like what kind of sets or, you know, lighting packages, like what kind of stuff are they doing? Are they doing like full scale, like concert touring and stuff like that?
Sure. So when I first went to Big Stuff as a student, I think it was probably 2004, I believe. I grew up in a tiny, small town. I'd never seen any type of concert lighting. I don't think I'd ever really been to a concert at that point. But yeah, I mean, they have a full audio video package. It felt to me like what you see on TV and on the movies. It was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And they're using it, you know, to worship God. Like, this is crazy. But no, it was, I think the last year that I actually worked for the camp, we had, I believe it was upwards of like 82 or 84 different movers on the stage or in the audience, or, you know, we had LED tiles and, DNBV rigs, like state-of-the-art stuff, at least at that time. I think that was 2018, 2019. Still state-of-the-art, but yeah, so it was just, it was an introduction to a world that I just didn't really know existed. I didn't know you could do that stuff for work. I figured it was like, you know, 30 people in the world that did this kind of stuff. I don't know. I was from a small town, so I just, yeah. Everything was amazing to me back then. But yeah, so yeah, it was full scale production.
That's awesome. So how did seeing that dovetail into fabrication and stuff like that? Did you grow up like with a welder in your hand or something, or, you know,
kind of thing? Sure. Kind of not exactly. Okay. Anybody from a small town will probably understand this, but you don't really call a plumber. You don't really call an electrician. You just, your family does it yourself, or you know somebody that knows how to do that kind of stuff. So as you grew up fixing everything, you know, with my dad and my mom built their house when I was 9 years old. And we did, you know, almost everything. Like, my granddad framed the house because he knew a bunch of buddies that knew how to frame, and he had cat holes and back holes. We did, like, my granddad actually let me dig the, it's not the septic lines, the field lines for our septic tank system. Like, when I was 8 years old, he was like, here, go ahead. Here's a cat hole. Go ahead and start digging. So like, I came from a world of like, just, you figure it out, whatever problem is in front of you, you got to figure it out. And with that came learning how to use tools. And what I've learned is that once you have an understanding of like what you're trying to accomplish with a tool, it's pretty easy from there. It's YouTube videos and Google. So that that played more of a role into fabrication than Big Stuff. I think it really melded together when I learned, like, there weren't a lot of people fabricating specifically for set designs. Like, we would use a metal shop that did like commercial welding, like they would do some of our sets, or we would use like all these exterior people, but nobody that had like one specific set or one specific goal, which was building sets. So when I left Big Stuff in 2019, I was like, I think I can probably do this. Like it seems to me that there's a hole in this industry, which is like custom pieces, custom fabrication. And it turns out that I think there is. So that's kind of how we became Black Label.
That's awesome. Yeah. And all your stuff is great. I know you've done a couple sets for North Point and, you know, the different like lobby pieces even. Yeah. For the Drive conference that North Point Ministries puts on and stuff like that. All fantastic. Like, it's yeah. Great. Yeah.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. So like, I know you're also like a lighting programmer.
Yeah.
Do you do much set design, like with the fabrication? Do people bring you in and like, hey, this is like, here, I want you to create me something, or do they bring you plans? And what's the relationship between like the client and you? It might depend on who it is too. But like, tell me more about that relationship.
You're hitting the nail on the head. It's a little of both. We do we will do designs for people. A lot of our clients nowadays bring us ideas. I don't think that we excel. We don't. That's not really our passion. I don't think our passion is designing. It's not really my passion anymore. It was for a time, but now that I've gotten into the fabrication side of things, I really enjoy taking an idea and figuring out how to make it work rather than coming up with an idea. I think there's also a creative space that you have for a time. Now, this is just me and I'm spitballing. I don't know if this is actually true, but I think I ran out of creative energy at one point. It's slowly coming back, but I was doing so many designing for people, for events, that I ran out of ideas where I was just like, I don't know, just put the truss up in the air, you know? So it's been a little of both. I try to accept as much help as I can on the design front, because realistically trying to run a business and then also sit at your computer for 4 hours and come up with cool ideas doesn't really work. You know, as a business owner, I don't get a lot of free time to just sit there and ponder on what I want to do or what would be cool. It just, there's a lot more, you know, I'll probably get 3 or 4 phone calls in the midst of those 4 hours that distract me. So that's another element too, is just being busy. You know, the busier we are, the harder it is to find time to sit down and design. But yeah, it's kind of both. Like with North Point specifically, Sam Turner was the one that brought the idea up. You know, of course I have input and we collab, but for the bulk of the idea is him saying, I want this here, want that there. How do we make that work? How do we make this box, you know, be isolated and only have light from one source or whatever the problem is. So,
well, and imagine that's where some of the creativity comes in, because you have to figure out how to make that work, which is sometimes very creative. Like someone can give you a 2D something, but you're turning it into a 3D physical piece that needs to be able to hang or stand by itself or whatever. So,
yeah, it is. A different version of creativity is like a lot of times people give me shapes, you know, they'll put a shape on a piece of paper on a Vectorworks drawing and be like, we want this to be lit by X, Y, Z. Like, how do we do that? So that's where a lot of my time and energy is invested, is figuring out how to make that shape come alive and exist in the world. So that I found that fulfilling, more so than the beginning of Black Label when I was doing fully designed, you know, design, engineering, design, and fabrication of all of it. But mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also had a background in lighting. That was kind of where I started in production. With Big Stuff, I became their lighting director for camps, and then their lighting director for the actual Big Stuff events, which was, it's the camp organization is kind of split in two. There was a Big Stuff camp side and then a Big Stuff event side, and the two were kind of operated independently until camp season, which was 2 months out of the year. So for 10 months, we were just the production company, any other production company that did events for, you know, whoever would call and ask. And then we would come together for those 2 months, do the production for the camp, and then split again and, you know, repeat the cycle. But I project managed for Big Stuff camps and Big Stuff events, and then was the full-time lighting director for Big Stuff events. So that taught me a lot about production. You know, I learned how rigging works, how you're supposed to rig a truss, where you're supposed to choke it, all that good stuff, which has also helped me with business and with, you know, coming in and helping churches. Like, hey, I know how to do all of it because I've done all of it, from fabrication to lighting, to setting up a console, programming, even. I don't do that much anymore, but, even programming presets and all that kind of stuff. It's been a very interesting just learning all of it and then using all of it.
Yeah. But that sounds like, you're filling a need for the church world. How many churches are you working with, or have you worked with? Like, are you finding a good market there, or is it sets? Is it small pieces? Is it like lobby installs? Like, what are you finding that you're doing a lot of?
I would say COVID minimized set designs. I feel like there was a pretty big shift when 2020 happened. I mean, even North Point shifted from, like, we would do a set every 6 months in a student room, and maybe 6 months in a main auditorium. And that's kind of scaled back to a year apart, you know, from set to set, or even longer than that. So I think we started learning how to do the lobby stuff. I mean, everything we do it's different every day. Like, some days we're welding, some days we're doing fine woodworking, some days we're dealing with acrylic. And it takes a lot of time to learn how to do all those different things.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I would say, like, in the beginning, we were doing mainly sets. That's pretty much all we were doing. And then it slowly shifted to people being like, hey, well, you have a welder. Can you make this thing for us for our lobby? We're having, you know, a volunteer night that we want to highlight volunteers. Can you make this thing? And then that's evolved into us doing probably half and half set designs and builds. I mean, we've done some things for Chick-fil-A, Brand Apart, in the last couple of years too. It's let us expand into, like, that territory where, you know, by doing the sets and by learning how to work with wood, work with plastics, acrylics, PVC board, expanded PVC board, just all kinds of different materials, it's let us encroach into that market. So I would say it's probably 50-50 now, but because of COVID and because of our learning curve and ability to work with different materials, there's probably a better word for that, for materials, but I don't know, avenues,
materials, yeah. Your medium, sure, whatever you want
medium,
to say.
That's what I was looking for. Yeah. Different mediums.
Yeah. No, that's super cool. Yeah. Just all the different stuff. I mean, I know, my limited, you know, theater, background, I mean, it's very limited. I mean, they're so creative and versatile on making all the sets and stuff like that, being, you know, lightweight and being able to fly them and or move them quickly and stuff like that, which, depending on the church, you don't really have to do. It's more down to price for churches, really, probably. Do you run into big conversations, or how have the conversations been with, like, they come with you this idea, but they only have this budget? Like, is there a lot of that, or do churches know when they're coming to you, like, do they know what they're asking, I guess, is what I'm saying. Not trying to disparage any church or disparage you
that. It's a conversation we have a lot. That's shifted too. Like, in the beginning, we would have a initial design meeting, and I would come up with the world for them and be like, this is what we could do. And I would shoot way too high. And then they'd be like, well, we only have, you know, $5,000 or $4,000 to do what you want to do, which, you know, is a healthy budget for some, but not for others. And sometimes I'd be giving them like a $20,000 idea. I learned quickly to ask up front and be like, hey, I'm not trying to take every penny that you own, but I just need to know, like, what you're working with here. Like, do we have the budget to do $15,000, or do we need to scale back more towards five?
Was that received well?
You know, I found that it is, and I think it's in presentation a lot. I like to deal in honesty, and from a business world, I don't know that that's, like, super typical, but I feel like in the church world, it's very accepted that everybody should be honest. You know, we're Christians, don't lie.
We would hope.
Yeah. So I think it's a lot of me instilling trust into them. And what I used to do, and I still do sometimes, is I'll say, what is the bottom dollar that you're willing to spend? Like, if you I'll say, what's the least amount of money that you want to spend on this? And that normally starts the conversation off in a good direction, because most people have a number. Most people have like a budget line item in their yearly budget. And I'm not trying to necessarily find that out. You know, I'm not trying to nickel and dime and make every penny that I can, but I'm trying to be realistic and say, okay, what's the least amount of money you want to spend? And sometimes they'll just say, well, we have X amount of dollars. We have $5,000. We have $7,500. That's typically how it goes. But I feel like framing it that way has helped people know and see that I'm not trying to take you for everything you're worth. I'm just trying to figure out, where's the line here? Like, where do we need to be aiming at? So that has saved me a lot of time and energy drawing up things that are way too big or way too imaginative to actually pull off. But I feel like it's always received decently well. I've never had somebody not want to tell me a number, which is great. You know, I would encourage people to be honest about that too. You know, you don't have to, if your budget is $5,000, tell them four, see what happens with that, you know? But yeah, that's how we've worked on it.
That's great. I know that that's sets and stuff like that. Now, have you, talking about sets or talking about stage, well, if there's not a physical set, stage lighting plots or design and stuff like that, have you seen any shifts there? Are people, I know a lot of churches are going towards LED walls and stuff like that. Is the church world sort of moving completely towards LED wall, or is there people doing sort of both, or like what have you guys been noticing?
I feel like there is a shift towards simplicity. And even in lighting plots, I feel like most people like a simple lighting plot. I mean, from a lighting perspective, for me, you could do a lot more with a simple lighting plot than you can with some crazy configuration. Straight lines are great. Straight lines are amazing as far as programming goes. You can often come out with a better show with a straight line. I used to try to make these crazy 3D contraptions out of truss, and it would look cool while we were building it, and then I'd go to program it and I'd be like, this doesn't look good at all. You know, I'd much rather have a straight line of, you know, Java spot or beams. You know, I'd much rather have that than have, you know, 18 different sources of light. As far as the LED and the set goes, it's kind of half and half. I feel like people either go the LED route or they stay on the scenic side. LED is super useful. It's amazing. It's an amazing product, but it's expensive. You know, it the upfront initial cost is huge. And I don't think, rightfully so, I don't think a lot of churches have said, like, we want to pay that initial upfront cost. I like the mix of the two. I think there's a place for materials that you see everywhere on a stage. I think it can look foreign and alien if you just have like LED walls and lights and strips. It can look just futuristic, and I don't know that that's what I would want to walk into. As an attendee, I would want to see something that's like tangible and visible, like something I see every day. Like, I like the use of wood textures and concrete or something that you would see out in the everyday life. It just doesn't feel as disconnected to me whenever you use materials that you see in the day to day. But I think there's a healthy balance of the two. You know, I think there's room for both.
Can you point to anything, or can you point to anybody that you're like, hey, that's really, I really like what they're doing with the mix there? Cause I haven't looked hard, but I have not seen anybody mixing the two.
Sure. No is probably the short answer. I a long time ago found myself looking at Instagram pages and concerts and just feeling like that imposter syndrome come up when I was looking at all these other crazy pages. And I realized that like my best work comes from my experience. My best work comes from, you know, just what I feel and what I think. And honestly, nature inspires me more than anything. So I don't really spend much time like delving through the internet, looking at concerts, looking at what this person did, looking at what that person did. Now, there's times for that, of course. Like, if you're trying to achieve a specific thing and you've seen it before, Bon Iver is a band that I love and listen to a lot. And they used, I think it was 2 years ago, they used a bunch of mirrors and a bunch not motors, but the cable lifts.
Winches?
Winches, yes. They used a bunch of winches and basically turned the mirrors so so that as they shot a light at them, the mirror itself would. Yeah. So like I wanted to achieve that look at a Christmas event for Browns Bridge Church up in South Forsyth, Georgia. And I just looked into what they did and I was like, how do they do that? So like there are times to do that, but for the most part, I don't really go digging through Pinterest or Instagram, and I'm not knocking that at all. That's just my process. And that's what works for me. I feel like it kept me away from like feeling like a failure all the time. It made me feel like, okay, I can have my own ideas. I don't need to mimic somebody else just to be good. You know, I can come up with stuff that I like. So that's been my process and my personal journey, but yeah.
No, that's good. I mean, I think that's an important conversation with anybody in sort of the creative field. I tend to do the same thing. Like, obviously, you know, I like going to concerts and seeing what other people are doing, but I also don't want to copy them. You know, I think there's a fine line between copying and, you know, picking out ideas. Sure. Like that's really
inspiration
cool.
Versus recreation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think sometimes the church world just straight up copies.
Yeah. Yeah. And, which I don't want to knock it. Like there's room for that. If you don't have somebody that's highly creative on your team, or, you know, if you're not highly creative yourself, then it makes sense. Like I think that I'm creative, but I think I'm creative in a specific avenue. Like I don't just see myself as like some masterful painter of production equipment and gear. Like I think I have bursts and I have moments that I'm like, oh my gosh, this would be amazing. But they're on a day-to-day basis. I'm just like, I don't know, what would this look like? Would this be cool? You know, it's not, I'm not Picasso painting. I'm just your everyday guy trying to figure out how to make money, do something that's cool and inviting and warm for people. I will say I skipped over it, but North Point, I do feel like does a really good job of blending some of the like technology and also materials and like tangible tactile stuff. Everything that we've done there has always been just like warm to me. Like it doesn't feel like a game show or a concert. It feels like here's something to look at. Here's something to like, you know, we all worship differently. We all experience church and God differently. Like, here's something that you can look at if you need to, or, you know, experience, but also we're not going to try to like, you know, blow your mind with our lighting system or with our LED wall. We're just, you know, we're pointing towards what's important, not necessarily trying to draw your attention in, but yeah.
Yeah. I guess when I think about it, it does do that. If there is any criticism of the sets that North Point's done, is that it doesn't, you know, like, oh, it's not the newest, greatest, like it's not the, you know, because North Point doesn't have LED yet, LED wall. And I know for a fact that there's a lot of people that want it. And there's some good reasons for it. And you know, there's some reasons that like, hey, it would be really cool to do this. But I think you're right in that maybe they are skirting that line at the moment of not being showy, but there's still something attractive on stage.
Sure. I mean, we could get into a theological debate about it. But I, honestly, like, it just, it's what are you trying to draw in, and what's your main goal? And I think, I mean, I've been to a lot of churches and I've helped with a lot of church production designs with Passion and 12 Stone, like a bunch of the Atlanta area churches, you know, and not knocking any of them. They all do a great job. They all have their draw, but North Point's draw, I feel like, has always been North Point, like what they're preaching from the stage, how they interact with people. And I do think that the stage designs and the production value of North Point reflects that. It reflects it positively in a way that's like, we're not trying to blow your mind, but we are just trying to, you know, give you something, you know, something that makes you feel comfortable in the room, something to look at. I mean, I know I said that earlier, but there are people that don't really get into worship, and, you know, having having something to look at and amazing colors, it's the same as a sunset. You know, you can see God in that. And I think doing that artfully is what North Point does very well. You know, it's not the main thing, but it is a thing that you can participate in if you want. Otherwise, you can close your eyes and raise your hands and, you know, sing your heart out. You know, you can do whatever you want.
Sure. No, I really like what you just said there. That's a really cool concept or way to think about the lighting on stage, because typically I'm thinking of the lighting on stage as sort of reflecting or sometimes enhancing the music that's coming from stage, but you see it as more of like reflecting who God is or reflecting nature. That's really cool. Can you talk more about that if you want, or if you can?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what drew me to lighting in the first place, was that pivotal moment at Big Stuff camps when I was 12 years old. Like that's what I remember seeing, was the lighting. And I just felt this like sense of warmth and sense of awe and sense of just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I likened it to, I don't know that I did when I was 12, but in my, you know, former year or past future years reflecting back on it, I was just like, man, that's the same feeling that I get when I like, when I'm out in nature and I'm on a mountain hiking and I see a sunset. Like, it's just, it's the same like awe. And that was always my goal. Of course, you have to match the music. You have to be a part of the program, but my goal is to never just match the music. It was to be like, I also want to, you're creating kind of a moving painting, you know, on the stage. And it's like, how can I show beauty and color and, you know, intensity? How can I use that to also be a part of the band and be a part of God, what people are experiencing of God? So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot. I mean, I'm partial. I'm a lighting guy, or was a lighting guy, but I think, I don't know. I just experienced a lot through the lighting at Big Stuff camps and always have, you know. Even when I go to a concert nowadays, it can make or break it for me. You know, if the lighting guy's doing too much, I'm like, just calm down. And if they're doing it right, then it just adds to the experience of, you know, whatever you're experiencing, whether it's concert, God, church, Jesus, whatever. So, yep.
Yeah, it can definitely be a distraction, 100%. But well, I mean, really any of the elements on stage can be a distraction. You know, if the snare is too loud, or if there's a wash pointed straight at your face, it's going to take you out. I know you're not programming much anymore, but like, you know, all the, you know, lighting directors or lighting programmers are faced with the same sort of questions or comments of like, oh, lights are in my eyes, you know, this didn't match the music, this, you know, like, how do you reconcile like your programming choices on a Thursday, listening to rehearsal tracks potentially or whatever, to like a Sunday service or Sunday morning?
Yeah, that one is, that's, it's always difficult. It's always been hard. It's kind of like trying to explain an abstract painting. Like you can't really explain it unless you see it. And I'm saying that not having ever experienced an abstract painting in any sort of surreal way, but I feel like it's something that you just have to take and use. Like if it's your boss or if it's somebody that's, you know, above you saying like, that's too fast or that's too slow, I've always just erred on the side of, you know, I'll do whatever they say, because ultimately like it is not my specific individual experience. It's the experience of everybody there. So if my lights are too much, if they are in people's faces and people don't like it, then it's my job to, you know, give people a welcoming, warm environment that they can experience God in. Now if I have a specific reason for doing a specific thing, of course I'll say like, hey, this is why I'm doing it. Can you look at it through that lens or that perspective of like, do you feel that energy in the kick drum in that moment? Like, that's why I'm doing it. But I think I generally erred on the side of just going with the flow and being amenable and acceptable to whoever and whatever. I will say I don't feel like I had a lot of that. There wasn't, I think if you're doing it well and if you're doing it right, you may not get a lot of that pushback. It all depends on the person that you're interacting with. Like, you know, your boss may be a little more strict or a little harder on you than any of mine ever were. But, you know, if you're doing it well, if you're doing it, if you're actually feeling for the moment rather than like just trying to, I feel like a lot of guys get wrapped up in just trying to make an amazing show. Like they're like, let me use everything, every bit of my knowledge to make this as crazy as I can within whatever parameters I have. I think it's easy to get caught there too. It's just being like, well, my console can do this, so why don't I use that? Rather than saying, what does this moment need? What do I need to do here? Like, is side light better for this moment? Is blinders in people's face good for this moment? There's a, I think you can emotionally feel that connection with your lighting rig essentially, and say like, what do I need to do with this? You know, what's too much, what's too little?
Interesting. That's great. Now, did you find a difference between like programming for, you know, big stuff where you understood and were bought into what they're doing versus a contracting gig? What's the difference there between just like coming in, you know, 2 hours before the event programming versus like, I really like what Big Stuff or what this organization is doing. Do you try to take that same, you know, philosophy that we just talked about to both places, or are they just slightly different?
I feel like the more pivotal, the pendulum that it hinges on for me was always the crowd. Like, is it students? Is it middle schoolers? Cause they just want it to be crazy. You know, they just want to have a good time. Is it senior adults? Because I used to do stuff for Samaritan's Purse, and most of their crowd was, you know, 50, 60 plus, and they didn't want lights in their face at all. So I got yelled at a couple of times for that on those gigs. But I think that's the bigger consideration for me, or always was like, what crowd are you dealing with? You know, are you, if it's high schoolers, that was like my perfect slot, because high schoolers did want to be moody, but they also wanted to be crazy. Like, programming for high schoolers was always great, because you just got such a variety. When you're programming for adults, you do have to be a little more tame and a little more calm. But yeah, I mean, it would depend. A lot of times I would ask, you know, I would ask, what if I was programming and contracting for this X church, I would ask like, hey, what does your Sunday to Sunday service look like? Do you want like concert atmosphere? Do you want worshipful, you know, soft tones? Like what are you looking for from me? And then that would always, or typically, answer the question pretty well for me. It's like, okay, cool. Well, they used to a couple Colorado ones pointed at the band. You know, they want everything they can get out of, you know, whatever they're renting from us. So let's give them the full bore. But also artfully, you know, I always tried to be as tasteful as possible. Even if it's programming a Drake song, you know, it's still fun to be tasteful and artful with
it. Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. With the, I know you've contracted quite a bit with different churches and stuff like that. Do you have any advice for contractors, lighting contractors, or people that are like, hey, we really come design us a set, or, you know, something in those lines? Do you have any advice for people that are in that Absolutely. World right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my friends, Chris Coleman, said it best. He was like, you need three things to live. He was talking about specifically the music industry and playing instruments, but it applies here as well. He said, you need three things to succeed, or two of three things to succeed. You need to be on time, know what you're doing, or be a good hang. And if you can hit all three of those, then you are like your prime. So if you can do two of those things, if you can be on time and be a good hang, people will want you around. If you can be on time and know what you're doing really well, people will want you around. If you can do all three, you're going to succeed. Because ultimately, when you're contracting, sometimes you're living with these people for a week, and you know, you want to be an amenable person that can ebb and flow and hang out and have a good time. But you also want to know what you're doing. I mean, don't fake it till you make it. That is, in the production world, that does not work. If you don't know, say you don't know. I went through phases where I would try to fake it till I make it or made it. And it just, it failed every time because obviously like I didn't know how to set an IP address on a computer for, to talk to, you know, a LED tape or LED pixels or whatever like that. So I would just say, be honest too, just be upfront. Don't try to prove yourself. Let your work speak for yourself. You know, just be honest about what you do and don't know. And, you know, if you need help, ask, because most people, you know, I've contracted for a couple different companies in Atlanta and gone all over the US contracting for churches or corporate events or concerts or whatever. And most everybody I've met is they're awesome. Like there's not very many people that are out to get you. You are a team. You are the audio guys. Even, you know, if you're having problems, a lot of times audio guys would help me, or, you know, vice versa. If I was done with my lighting rig, I'd get it up and out. So just be a nice person, be honest about what you know and what you don't. And yeah, just try to hit those three things on time. Good hang, know what you do.
That's really cool. Is that who you look for? I know you work with, you know, your company works with contractors for all the set design or fabrication and stuff. Is that what you're looking for too?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't even, knowing what you're doing is probably pretty low on my list. We try to build a company based around just work is life and life is work. And I feel that if you can't get along with the people that you work with, then you probably are doing something wrong. Like my whole goal with Black Label has been just to have a good time and achieve a goal. And in that order, like if we're not having a good time, we're probably not going to achieve the goal that we want to do. Nobody wants to have a bad time at work. You know, it's the bulk of your life. So why make it a miserable time? So I look for people that are willing to work hard, but also are willing to cut up and have a good time and, you know, take things lightly and bust it when they need to, and, you know, relax when we have a little bit of time, all that kind of stuff. But, and the knowledge thing, it's such a specific area. Like there's not a college degree that can give you everything that you need to work at Black Label. It's, you could be a master welder, but if you don't know anything about woodworking, then, you know, you wouldn't fit. So I look for people that are just willing to learn, you know, whatever I throw at them. Mm-hmm. And then I see that as my job to teach them, you know, say like, hey, here's how you use a welder. Here's how you use a table saw. Here's what a router does, you know, whatever we're using that week.
Yeah, it's phrase or whatever. You can always train skills, but it's character or the good hang that you're looking for. You hire for that, and then you can train skills, stuff like that. That's really cool. I've not seen much of your fine woodworking. I'd be interested to see
that stuff. There's not a lot of it, but it is a part. It is a part of it for sure.
Yeah, that's super cool. So just to wrap everything up, is there anything that, like, I don't know, you'd tell, you know, Jonathan Amacher 5 years ago or 10 years ago for set or lighting to, like, hey, don't do this or start doing this? Or like, what would you say to people coming up or yourself 5 years ago?
What I would have told Jonathan early on was that, sorry, there's a fly in here. I would have said, you don't know it all, you know, be open to learning from people. Go with your gut. That's a big one. I feel like all of the right choices I've made in my life are going based on gut, whether that's morale issues or, you know, whether I should or shouldn't start a business. You know, my gut has always been the most honest to me, more than anybody that I know. And then I guess just learn, Google it. Every time I went through a phase where if I had a question, I would Google it. I would be like, where did DMX stem from? Why is DMX 512 channels? Why is it not 520? You know, like, how does power work? Why is 208 different than 120? Like everything, I would either ask somebody, and if they didn't give me an answer that was suitable or didn't feel like was, you know, extensive enough, I would Google it and just, you know, try to figure out the basis. A big one too is, what I've learned for me at least is, if I can understand the basic principles of something, it helps me understand the big picture. So one of the first things I teach my guys when we do set designs is why and how DMX works, why there's 512 channels, why there's, you know, what makes a universe. And as soon as they understand, like, oh, each light picks up on one channel and is passing the whole, like, it just, it clicks every time I explain, like, here's what DMX is. And that builds a basis for everything else. Because, you know, when you're telling somebody, address these 20 lights, 19 channels apart, it they're like, I don't know, why am I doing this? But if you tell them, like, this light's listening to 1 through 19, this one's listening to 20 through 39, it clicks, and they're like, oh, okay, cool, I got it. So start from the basics, whatever it is, like, learn how computers work, learn how, you know, you don't have to have like an all-encompassing knowledge, but just understand the basic principles of power and rigging and loads and metal and why is hardened steel, you know, stronger than mild steel. Just be interested in everything that you're doing. And if you're not, you know, find something you are interested in. Not saying get out of production, but find what interests you in that field, and then aim at it. So
yeah, I mean, nowadays production is involved in every aspect. I mean, it just,
there's a lot of technology.
Yep. And but even, you know, now we're moving into more of the computer world and stuff like that. So I know for me that's something that I've been trying to focus on, is learning more networking and stuff like that, which,
yeah,
I'm terrible at.
It's hard. Yeah, but me too, honestly.
It's somewhere, we're headed that way. So, you know, we gotta learn it.
Cool. Yep, we do.
That's awesome. Well, and one thing that stuck out to me, I mean, like, you're teaching your guys, you know, what a DMX universe is like. So they really don't need to come with any, they really just need to come, you know, willing to work and willing to learn.
Yep. That's it. Truthfully, everybody that I've hired minus one for contracting has been some kind of a friend, you know, it's been a friend or a friend of a friend. And like, I don't know if it's sustainable or not. It's sustained us for four and a half, five years at this point. But like, people say, don't work with your friends, but I for us, it hasn't been the case. All of us are friends, and, you know, we have days that we fight and get annoyed with each other and, you know, need to go have a conversation. But that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, like, your work should reflect your life. Like, you should treat people at work the same way you treat people outside of work. And I feel like we've done that, and we've caught some kind of a flow where we can do that. Like, everybody knows what's going on with, you know, Jimmy on a Tuesday night. They know that he just had a, you know, late night, he came in from a gig, whatever the situation, he just had a family member pass away. It's all the same thing. The whole, well, I don't know if what's the, there's an Apple TV show where, I forget his name, and I forget the name of the TV show, but basically he goes into work and he doesn't remember his work day.
At work. Severance.
Yeah, Severance, that's it.
Yeah, I've not seen it, but yeah. I've heard about it. Yeah,
sure. I feel like that is a expansion on that. Like, basically he remembers what happens at home only at home. When he goes into work, he only remembers what happens at work and doesn't know his other life. And I feel like that's kind of like what we're taught, is like, keep them separate, keep them, you know, divide them up. And I understand the reasoning behind that, and I understand that not all companies and corporations can do that, but I also just highly disagree with it. I feel like, you know, I should be, if I can be their friend, I should also be able to be their boss, and vice versa. You know, I work for some of my friends too, and it's great. So I think your work should, you know, reflect your life in some capacity.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Thanks for sitting and talking. This has been great. Do you mind sharing where people can reach you if they want to reach out for sets or whatever, get something fabricated?
Yeah. So the best way to reach me would be my email address. It's long and arduous, but it's jonathan@almacherlimited.co. That's jonathan @almacherlimited.co. Or you can look us up on blacklabel.co. We're on Instagram. We have a website that's blacklabel.co. It's always .co, not com. Yeah, you can find us there. You can see some of our past work on our website and Instagram account. We don't really post much. most of our work has come from word of mouth. I don't really feel like it's benefited us to post a lot on Instagram, so we don't have a lot out there, but you can see some of the stuff that we've done.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Aaron. Appreciate it, man.